You're listening to local programming produced in KUNV Studios.
The content of this program does not reflect the views or opinions of 91.5 Jazz and More, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, or the Board of Regents of the Nevada System of Higher Education.
Hi, I'm Charles Stanton. I'm on the faculty of the Honors College of UNLV and the Boyd School of Law.
Hi, I'm Gabriella Tam. I'm a fourth-year accounting student.
And welcome to
Social Justice.
Social Justice, a conversation.
A conversation.
Well, good evening, everybody. We're back again. Professor Stanton with my cohort, Gabriella Tam.
Hello.
And boy, I tell you, we have so many things to talk about today. We need almost an elongated program. But, of course, we're not allowed to have one. So we're going to have to take
24 hours.
24 hours, the minimal time. Well, anyway, where do we start? Well, I guess we start with the, by now, famous or infamous, depending on how you look at it, reincarnation of an 1864 law in the state of Arizona having to do with the banning of abortion, basically. The banning of abortion, a law that was passed before actually Arizona even became a state.
How is that even possible?
How is it even possible? Yes. But it basically lays out the fact that the abortion process is murder, and that people are, you know, going to be punished, and all the rest of this crazy stuff. What's interesting about it was that not too long ago they had passed, I guess it was a 5-week ban on the abortion,
mm-hmm.
But somehow a law that was passed before this territorial entity even became a state now supersedes a law from today. Are you out of your mind?
What the heck?
What is going on in our country, man? I don't know. You know, the Arizona Supreme Court, you know, I get the part that they're all Republican. I get that part of it. But come on. I mean, you know, you should know that something like that is just completely off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
And there doesn't seem to be, like, any accountability for these people. That's what's disturbing, like, you know, like somebody one time said, who judges the judges? But I mean, really,
yeah,
you know, and I think from a political point of view, it's actually going to benefit the Democratic Party and progressives,
because
they're going to turn out an enormous vote.
Yeah.
You know, when November comes, you're going to get a lot of people out to the polls that maybe never voted before,
mm-hmm.
because these decisions that they're making are basically against the will of like 3/4 of the people.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know. It's just always so crazy to me. How do you want to ban abortion? Because the idea of abortion, like, yeah, it's, you know, it's so you don't have a kid or whatever, but like, it also, like, saves people's lives. Like, people who are already out of a womb, you know? And then also, I don't know. It's just, like, is it because you don't think it will happen to you or someone that you love? Like, you're like, oh, yeah, let's just ban it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, my thing is this. There are people who oppose abortion on religious grounds.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And a lot of them are very sincere in what they believe,
mm-hmm.
and I respect that. I respect that.
Yeah,
it's not my opinion, but I respect what they believe. But there's a lot of people who are oppose it, supposedly because they are as, you know, religiously oriented as the other people, except that they're not.
Yeah,
a lot of the abortion movement, the movements who end abortion, has nothing to do with the child.
It's never to do with the child.
It's about the subjugation of women.
Mm-hmm.
It's about controlling what women do, and basically taking over the autonomy that a woman or any other human being should have with their body. This is what it is. So when you have a country like the United States of America, where there are more women in our country than there are men, and then you also have a huge plurality of people who believe that the woman should have the right to choose,
mm-hmm.
how do they come up with these decisions? Except that they have this agenda. They have this agenda, and the agenda is that we want to keep women in their place. Now, this agenda, this patriarchal agenda,
mm-hmm.
has gone back to probably the founding of the country,
mm-hmm.
where women were basically not given a voice to express themselves.
Yeah, we were just objects.
Objects, the right to vote. There's like a whole bunch of other things. But it's to me, it seems like they're getting further and further out with these decisions. Like, it's like there's like a defiance of reason and logic and fairness and all those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think women now are starting to realize more than ever that their rights are really in jeopardy. I've said before, and I'll say it again on this broadcast, I believe that what they want to do, the forces that are behind this, they want to end gay rights, they want to end all the rights for transgender people, the LGBT community, eradicate the decision that allowed gay marriage,
mm-hmm.
and if they're able to, actually revoke these marriages.
Yeah.
With the people who have already been married, but say that because it's against the law of God or whatever rationale that they use, so to speak. And you got a court basically now, a Supreme Court, that, you know, has just abandoned any sane analysis of law.
Yeah.
And it's completely partisan. We're seeing it, of course, in the situation with the ex-president,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, you have a situation where in so many months the people are going to have to vote, and they're going to have to make a decision who they're going to vote for. So it would seem logically that you would want the people of the country to have an idea as to the guilt or innocence of one of the people that's running. That would seem mm-hmm. like a logical thing. But their response to it is to delay the arguments till the end of the month, when this was a case that should have had a priority.
Yeah.
I remember when President Nixon
mm-hmm.
was involved with the Watergate investigation, and he had tapes and other documentation, and he did not want to turn them over to the legal authorities.
Yeah.
And the court ruled unanimously. I mean, there were a number of those justices
mm-hmm.
who had been appointed by the president, and they all voted that, you know, he had to do that. When President Clinton was in office, he was subpoenaed to appear before the grand jury.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, he had to appear. He had to give testimony. And those were cases where, you know, they were actually in office. They were both in office at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Here you have a guy, he's out of office now. He's out of office.
And they're just taking their sweet time.
They're just taking their time, you know. And that the situation down in Florida, that's a joke too.
Mm-hmm.
Because the woman who's the judge, I'm not going to say that she's biased or prejudiced or any of those things. I don't know what's inside of her, so I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt on that.
That's
but
nice.
from a legal expertise perspective, it doesn't look like she knows what she's doing. She's making decisions, and she's writing decisions based on. It doesn't seem like what the law should be, even.
Mm-hmm.
And yet somehow she's sitting on the case. You know, I think the mistake that was made, I've said this to a number of people, I think Jack Smith should have tried to recuse her right off the bat. Once they had the situation where she appointed the special master, this is going back a number of months,
mm-hmm.
and it was appealed to the Court of Appeals in Atlanta, and they unanimously not only reversed her ruling, they basically said that, you know, she didn't even know what she was doing.
She looks like a joke, basically.
Basically, so... You know, and then she somehow shows up again in this case, and she's doing the same thing.
The heck?
So you say what is that about?
Mm-hmm.
But I think we have a pretty good idea. So that's how we started off our program. Then it was another interesting tidbit I saw recently, having to do with, I don't know how many folks out there watch the women's basketball finals, the semifinals, the Iowa game versus Connecticut, the Iowa game versus South Carolina. Got a bigger rating.
Yeah, my dad was talking about this.
A bigger rating than the men's championship game.
Uh-huh.
So more people saw the women's championship game than the men's championship game.
Why is that?
Well, I guess because, you know, there was a lot more drama in it.
Oh yeah, there's this one player,
Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, she's like, really? Is she good? She's like really good or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've like heard that like some people don't like her because she's not very sportsmanlike.
Sportsmanlike. Well, that I cannot say. But what I will say is this, that, so I'm reading that in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I says, well, I said, that's great. That's great. So then they have an article about the amount of money that the NCAA gets from the television networks.
Oh, it's probably like nothing, huh?
Well, nothing for the women.
Yeah, yeah.
The women only got, their games only got $8 million. Okay, all right.
Uh-huh.
The men's got $865.
$865?
Yeah, versus $8. Okay, but it gets better, though. It gets better, though. Because the $865 that the men got, that was just for the basketball. That doesn't count into the other sports. The $8 million that the women got, that was for all the sports, including the basketball.
What?
So they were getting robbed, basically.
What the heck?
They were getting robbed.
$8 million versus $865
yeah.
million?
Yeah. So there you go. So how do you change that? Well, the way you change it, basically, if you're the NCAA, which I'm surprised they didn't think of doing this, they should put in work out contracts separating the sports.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't be all the sports are grouped together. Each sport should have its own, like women's soccer, women's mm-hmm. gymnastics, what have you. But I was surprised. It's like 100 to 1.
Yeah.
100 to 1.
No, literally, like not even just 100. Millions of dollars. Oh, yeah. My God.
$865 to $8 million. Yeah, yeah. So.
And the 860, like you said, 865 was just for men's basketball?
Just for the men's basketball. But the $8 million that the women got for the basketball included all the sports. So it's nothing. If you figure out, you got women's field hockey, women's softball, which is very popular viewing,
mm-hmm.
Women's gymnastics, women's basketball, etc.
Yeah.
That's nothing.
It's not, that's like not, that's like it's probably like, less than $1 million for like each sport.
Yeah,
huh?
It's like the crumbs you throw to a bird.
Yeah.
Just here's a couple of crumbs.
Here's just some like, you know, like $1 million or whatever. Oh yeah. My God.
So that's what it is now. That's what it is. But that shouldn't be really, in a sense, a surprise though.
It's not. It's just hearing the numbers. It's just like,
yeah.
Oh my gosh,
no,
what?
It's bad. No, it's bad.
It's so bad.
You know. So moving along from that, we're gonna. I didn't want to start the program with it today because we've started the program with it a few occasions, but I wanted to talk about the airline situation again.
Yep.
Now you know this is a program called Social Justice, A Conversation. And one may say, well, what does the business of an airline have to do with social justice? Well, to have social justice, to enjoy social justice, to seek social justice, you have to have one very important thing to do that. And the most important thing you have to do any of those things or to be in our studio today is to be alive.
Yeah.
That you're alive. You're breathing. Alive. Okay? Anyway, one of the whistleblowers mm-hmm. who has been cooperating with the government.
Good for him.
You know, it's sad, though. I mean, it's sad, really, that, you know, this was not brought to the attention of people a long time ago. But one of the whistleblowers is basically saying now that the fuselages in these planes are defective and that the fuselage could I guess use the word rupture if you want to use that word, in the process of the flight. So I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again. As the evidence mounts in these cases, mm-hmm. when you have people coming forward, when you have employees, when you have people who are, I mean, actually business people who talked about how Boeing was cutting all their costs, mm-hmm. They were not using proper materials. One of the things that they were doing in certain parts of the plane, they were replacing the metal that they used to use with other compounds. So they were not using the same metals that they were using that were apparently incredibly strong, and they were substituting them. The thing that got me, though, the response of these people, which is scary, is, you know, when they're questioned about, the durability of these products that make up the composition of the plane.
Yeah.
Because they use an enormous amount of suppliers. I mean, when an aircraft is built, it's not merely, you know, one or two companies that are building it. Mm-hmm. It's all the different, contractors and subcontractors bringing in their unique parts.
Yeah.
And the answer was, as I took it, well, as for now, everything's working well.
Obviously not.
But what got me about that was, but you replaced some of the essential parts of the plane with other parts that there's a question about their durability. So if you replace these metals with other parts, you really don't know how long their shelf life is.
Yeah.
And you're bringing in this other stuff. And I'm saying to myself, whoa, you know, that's kind of scary.
Yeah, like when you want to make change, you want to make change for the better. Safety-wise, you want, like, your products to be stronger, not I'm going to cut some corners and put all these people at risk.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, that's what you would think.
You would think.
But the truth of the matter is that all this money that they made, you know, in cutting corners mm-hmm. and building these planes very quickly was profit money that they made that went to the executives and went to the shareholders.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who was the CEO, he left with a $32 million severance package. So I'm saying to myself, well, what does any of that have to do with the safety of the airline? So now, basically, they're going to have to start from scratch. But from our perspective, as you know, citizens and people who fly, and you know, the people who listen to this program, I would ground all the planes.
Yeah,
I've been saying this. I've been saying it. I've said it like so many times. I would ground all the planes because some of the talk about the fuselages had to do not even with the new planes that they were building, but the planes that they've been using for a number of years. And we don't know, you know, with the wear and tear of those planes, how much longer those parts are going to be able to keep going. So they should just do it. They should just say, listen, it's going to be a big inconvenience to people. We're going to have to cancel a lot of flights. because they're the main, they're the major manufacturer for I guess all the major airlines, mm-hmm. but you got to do it.
Just do it. Like, they can even do it when people, like, when, I don't know, like, plane usage is low, you know? Like, what time would that would be? I don't even know. But, like, you could even do it when people are not flying as much, you know?
Yeah, of course. Well, I mean, I think, and again now, so, you know, you have the FAA, okay? Mm-hmm. And they're supposed to be the watchdog. But all the information, a lot of the information in this whole scandal has come from people who are whistleblowers, and then people coming forward who are threatened, actually, with the loss of their jobs mm-hmm. if they cooperated with the investigation. So how do you rely then on a government institution like that, where instead of, like, really trying to get to the bottom of it, you know, they're just, like, very, like, labile. Like, we're going to investigate it, but, you know, we don't want to step on any toes. And the reason for that, not just in the FAA, and a lot of government agencies, is these people work for the government, and then they leave that job, and they wind up working for the companies they were investigating while they were working for the FAA, the FDA, all these different agencies.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, there was a huge article about our drug prices.
Yeah.
And of course we have much higher drug prices than most of the rest of the civilized world.
Yep.
Okay. But it was interesting in the major drugs, like Ozempic, Xarelto, and all the rest of the stuff. The actual raw materials that they use or compound to make whatever those drugs are, it's like $20, $30. And they're charging, like, for Ozempic and some of these drugs, $1,500, $2,000 a month and more. How do they get away with this stuff? Where's the government regulation? Where is the government? Where is our government? What are they supposed to be doing in all these regulatory processes? And you know, it's really astounding to me that there isn't more of a public outcry.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like they were saying, like, you know, with the weight loss drugs. Oh, and the other thing, the other one that's a big one, which is also related to people's health, is insulin.
Mm-hmm.
And the huge insulin prices. Why? The cost of materials is very low. Why should people be paying this exorbitant amount of money every month?
It's just, I know we always talk about this, but it's just annoying how these companies just don't care about people. Like, you have, like, if you're in the medical profession, you're literally supposed to be caring for people. And then in the airline industry, you should be caring about people, because you're, like, if you really think about it, like, a lot of people use planes to like, unite with their family. Like, even, like, I'm going to, like, I don't know, I gotta, like, search up which plane that I might be using, but, like, I want to go, you know, I want to go see my family overseas, but I don't want to have that thought, like,
yeah.
what if the door flies off and I get sucked out? I don't want that in the back of my mind. I want to be excited about seeing my grandparents and my family.
Of course. That's a normal thing to want to do. No, it's interesting, you know. I was talking with somebody the other night. We were talking,
mm-hmm.
and they worked at one of the big hotels in the city, and they'd been worked there for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking how, when they started working there, they didn't get a salary. They everything was tips. That they had to subsist on tips.
Yeah.
And they had a huge article in the USA Today now. It's called Tip Nation. It's about a lot of these restaurants and places, you know, where they have the gratuity or whatever it is
mm-hmm.
added to the bill. But that's because they're not paying the people anything.
Yeah.
They pay people meager wages. And then they want the customer not only to pay the meal, they want the customer to pay the salary of the workers.
Yeah, basically.
I mean, so what is that about, though?
I don't know. Like, and then, like, food is already getting, like, so expensive. And so, I don't know. And there's another thing. It's, like, with the, you know, a lot of like companies, you know, fast food are implementing, what is it, like robots and stuff.
Right,
like,
right.
They're just taking the people out of the, people out of like the restaurants and stuff. And they still want you to tip, but it's like, who am I tipping? Like,
yeah, yeah.
So you have that other thing too. It's just like sad. And then also like from an accounting point of view, I remember when I would have to do like payroll and like these employers, like they, at least they have to pay the tips. They have to give the tips to their workers.
Yeah, yeah.
But people don't even want to tip sometimes. It's like just, it's a difficult topic.
Yeah. Well, it's, and they should, you know, it's like a lot of these places don't even pay the minimum wage.
No.
You know? And then, you know, I always it always makes me think, they talk about the immigrants, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh, the immigrants, and all they're all...
Like, send them back, you know, whatever, send them back.
Well, you know, like in the San Joaquin Valley in these places where the people harvest the food.
Our crops,
what we eat. I don't think they get paid anything decent.
Oh, definitely not.
They had a very interesting article, and I was a little flabbergasted by this. You know, when I was back in the East Coast, when I was younger, I used to go out to the Hamptons.
Ooh.
And, you know, go to the beach and everything. I couldn't believe that the people who handyman people who were like domestics and everything, they were living in tents out there. They were living in tents in the woods.
Oh.
When in this ultra wealthy place.
Oh, that's like dystopian.
It is dystopian. But look at here, though.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you got so many positive things.
Uh-huh.
But you got this amazing homeless problem here.
No, yeah. Where was I going? I was going to my like family friend's like her kid, like golf tournament, and it was, where was it? It was Desert Pines.
Okay.
And we, like, you know, it's like weird kids. It's like you have a golf course, you know, where, and golf is usually viewed as like a rich man's sport,
right?
But when I was like when we were driving there, we drove past. You know, do you know Las Vegas Rescue Mission?
Yes, I do.
And so there was a lot of like homeless people around. It's just very like. It was just weird. It's just like we were going to a place, like a rich man's sports place, but we had to go through this like homeless area.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like
very
like dystopian, like we were saying.
Yeah. Well, it's just interesting. It's just interesting why they don't care though. You know, when you have all that, when you have all that, like in the city, we have all these successful places in making. More money now than they've ever made in the history of this city, or maybe any city, because of sports gambling. You know, and you see these people on the street. Something should activate you. That well, you know, we need to find a place for these people to live.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing with the young people, all the teenagers and people who
and all these kids,
kids, yeah, and like we need to do something because. Those children are our future.
Yeah,
like that should you know click with you.
It's just once again like the United States showing that all these policies that are like the abortion bans and stuff to like save the kids. It's not about the kids.
It's not about the kids.
That just shows it's never about the kids.
No, it's about a political agenda and unfortunately it's about greed.
Yeah.
And unless we address that as a society. And look at ourselves, which we don't want to do very much.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Nietzsche said it, that a society that doesn't look at its own values and examine its own values is doomed.
Oh, yeah.
You've got to look at what, not just how you're doing, you've got to look at how everybody else is doing, too. Mm-hmm. Well, on that sort of somber but maybe ultimately hopeful note, we want to thank you for listening and... we look forward to the pleasure of talking to you again next week.
Thanks for listening.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you for listening to our show. If you have any questions, please do not hesitate to contact us at TAMG1, that is TAMG1, at unlv.nevada.edu, or to contact Professor Charles Stanton at charles.stanton@unlv.edu.
See you next time.